You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
In the midst of the whirling day, in the hectic rush to be doing, in the frantic pace of life, pause here for a moment. Catch your breath. Relax your body. Loosen your grip on life. Consider that our lives are always unfinished business. Imagine that the picture of our being is never complete. Allow your life to be a work in progress. Do not hurry to mould the masterpiece. Do not rush to finish the picture. Do not be impatient to complete the drawing. From beckoning birth to dawning death, we are in process, and always there is more to be done. Do not let the incompleteness weigh on your spirit. Do not despair that imperfection marks your every day. Do not fear that we are still in the making. Let us instead be grateful that the world is still to be created. Let us give thanks that we can be more than we are. Let us celebrate the power of the incomplete, for life is always unfinished business.
So this month we've been making a virtue out of necessity. We're making a virtue out of the necessity of being in the depths of winter, a dark interior time of year when keeping indoors can make us inward looking and introspective. And so we've tried to make the dark time welcome by looking deeply into the existential darkness we all share, the persistent mysteries of our human life, vast areas of our unknowing. 2 weeks ago, we looked at our mysterious past. Last week, our unknowable future. Each time, we found that if we look carefully and pay attention in this darkness, we can find light. This is some of the light we found. Don't forget the Be It list here. Don't forget to add your contribution. I'm going to take it with me today. It's what quality you still want to grow in the time you have left on this earth, what your deepest sense of self yearns for. And of course, the sneaky agenda is that this is going to help me as your minister over the next few years in planning, preaching, and pastoral care. So if you missed those services, those previous two in this three-part series, they'll soon be on the podcast site, minus the visuals. This week is the last of these three themed services and looks at perhaps the darkest existential darkness of all, our inherent fallibility, our built-in limitations as human beings, which virtually guarantee that human ignorance is ultimately invincible, that our certainties will always be somewhat uncertain, and that our cleverness by itself is not really very clever. And that, as the opening words say, we are always going to be incomplete and unfinished. So as we're inherently fallible, knowing stuff is great and useful. But since we're fallible, there must be more to life than just knowing stuff. Leave you with that. Must be more to life than just knowing things. I want to warm up to this cold topic. How many of you, I've had the heat on since 8:30. How many of you are still feeling chilly? All right, if you're still feeling chilly, put your hands together like this. Rub really hard. It's called friction. Clap. Shake. That's got to be better. And to warm our brains up to this cold topic about human ignorance, let's play a little true-false game of general knowledge facts, things that we really, really have known to be true. And just call out true or false. Don't overthink any of these. True or false, coffee comes from beans. False, they're seeds. True or false, chameleons change color according to what they're sitting on. It's atmospherics, air pressure, humidity, temperature. True or false, you lose most of your body heat through your head. Absolutely false. Look, we can argue about these later. Believe me, I've only got 10 and I checked them exhaustively. True or false, human beings have 5 senses. Scientists say there's as many as 21. True or false, vitamin C helps you get over a cold. False. You're gonna need to think about this one. True or false, the Aztec Empire predates Oxford University. The Aztec Empire is more recent to us than the founding of Oxford University. True or false, there are different parts of your tongues for the sensation sweet, salty, bitter, sour. Absolutely false. I know. I mean, blew my mind too. True or false, fortune cookies are Chinese in origin. There you go. True or false, the earth revolves around the sun. Actually, since the sun itself is revolving around the middle of the galaxy, the earth traces more or less a spiral orbit. It doesn't revolve so much as spiral. True or false, one dog year equals 7 human years. Depends on the breeds, both true and false. I'm pretty sure my whippets used up. They're pretty highly strung. All right, so that's just a little game that shows that, you know, things that we just know can be wrong. So I want you to spend a little buzz time now turning to the people near you. When have you experienced a time in your life other than this quiz when you've known something to be true that turned out to be completely wrong? Take a few minutes and just buzz with your neighbors about that now. Or have you never been wrong about anything? Okay, well, that's just a way of getting a personal connection with, you know, our own inbuilt fallibility that, you know, human beings are always learning things and always wrong about stuff and trying to get their heads right and so on. And don't feel bad. I mean, do not feel bad. It is very freeing, I find, to admit how wrong we can be. I find it the most freeing thing about studying for ministry and being a minister was the freedom to say, I don't know, but I can try and find out. You know, even our best and most advanced knowledge in the world is built on shifty soil. There was a film about 10 years ago called What the Bleep Do We Know? Now, oh, Jenny and Christine, this would make a great Friday night film. And I wouldn't spoil the film watching to tell you that the conclusion to the question is not all that much, actually. Of all there is to know about the universe we live in, the best guess is that we know less than 2% of all there is to know. Which rather undercuts the last 2 weeks of this ambitious project to look into the persistent mysteries of where we come from and where we're going. Mysteries no amount of knowing stuff is going to help with. Now that, of course, begs the question, if we can't reliably know such things as our origins and our fate, why even talk about them? The philosopher Wittgenstein said, whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must remain silent. But if that were true, if we were true to that, we would never speak with each other about the really important things, and so we'd not just be lost, we'd be lost alone. In my attempt to strike a light in the existential darknesses of our past and future, I incorporated what we know about things like exponential math, genetics, zoology, fractal geometry, entropy physics, and quantum mechanics. Of course, if we're honest, we'd have to admit that the sciences themselves are unfinished, always recognizing they're wrong about stuff. They're progressive. They don't stay still. They shift, adapt, reinvent knowledge, always responding to new data and theorizing anew forever and ever. Amen. So it would be false to say I absolutely know all that stuff I talked about over the previous 2 weeks. Like you, I only know what others tell me. Here's a trade secret of ministry. The purpose of these talks isn't to transmit knowledge or information to you. I mean, hell, you have the same access to information that I do. When I was studying for ministry, they didn't give me the secret book of Arcana that they said, now just dole this out very slowly to them, and you can stretch out a 20-year career in ministry just giving them dribs and drabs of this secret knowledge. And I assume since you're here, you have a similar level of curiosity to me. And besides, in an oral medium like this one, just talking and listening, this is perhaps the least effective way to transmit knowledge. In the nearly 5 years I've been doing this, I've given over 160 of these talks, and with the best will and effort in the world, no one could be able to retain more than a few fragments here and there, say 2% again. And in this talk, this week, when I propose to tell you how little I know about what we don't know, we're going to go on as before, pretending, politely acting like the minister knows stuff we can't know, and that these talks are just some sort of lecture you are meant to absorb stuff from. If you want to learn and retain new knowledge, go read a book. Or better yet, Google something. You'll get millions of sources from the world's fastest librarian. Footnote to Dave, who came up with that line. Of course, it's not good enough to stand here and just say, oh, shucks, we don't actually know much about life and death, things church generally concerns itself with. It's not good enough to do that. Of course, I have a mind, and of course, I read, and of course, I know some stuff, and so do a lot of you. And don't get me wrong, these talks are meant to feed and free your head, but that is not the only thing, and it is not the most important thing these talks are for. What are they for? Well, stay tuned. As I too often forget that this talk is less about information and knowledge than it is about other things. Just to give you a rough idea about how wrong I can be about that, in preparing for this service today to show that it's not very clever to just be clever, I was going to offer cleverness. For instance, I was going to offer a lesson on intellectual pride from the ancient myth of Oedipus. Here was the cleverest man of his time, I don't know if you know the story, who was told by the oracle that he would kill his father and marry his mother. So he and his parents did everything they could to ensure he got as far away from them as possible to avoid this fate, and by getting him as far away as possible, he ran straight into that very fate. And when he discovered that, he blinded himself, hence the picture, not just as a painful atonement, but as a symbol of mankind's inherent ignorance, his blindness to the bigger forces that dominate our lives. In another draft of this service, now defunct, I was going to offer you classical philosophy's take on intellectual pride in the person of Socrates. Socrates, whose reputation for wisdom came from his frank admission of the scope of his ignorance. He claimed to know nothing. He simply asked innocent questions of people. He asked innocent questions of people who claimed to know things, and in doing so, managed to show that they didn't really know what they thought they knew. Now, as you can imagine, that made him terribly popular with the intellectually proud. So they put him on trial for treason and for corrupting youth. In the democratic vote that followed, 50% more people voted to kill him than thought he was guilty of anything, which rather proved his point about human ignorance. And so, with his humble philosophy vindicated, he swallowed his hemlock, as is here depicted, with equanimity and died the good philosopher's death. In still another draft of this talk that I threw out, I used a Renaissance painting to show that we do not know what we think we know about the past by focusing on this famous and expensive Rembrandt called, with breathtaking intellectual pretension, Aristotle contemplating a bust of Homer. It's a Rembrandt. When it was purchased by the Metropolitan Museum of New York, it was the most valuable single painting in the world, which meant that in the view of people who know stuff, this painting was worth you knowing about. Except there's a wee problem. There's nothing about it to know apart from the fact that it's oil on canvas from 17th century Holland. I mean, if you look at it a moment, Aristotle contemplating a bust of Homer, the bust isn't Homer. It can't be. We don't even know if he lived, much less when, much less what he looked like. It's a prop bust from Rembrandt's studio. Since Rembrandt's painting it, the man in the painting is not Aristotle. He's not even wearing Greek clothing. We don't know what Aristotle looked like either. And since Rembrandt, it's not Rembrandt now, and since Rembrandt ran a studio with apprentices that were learning to paint exactly the way he painted, and since he owned the intellectual property of those things, there is no person on earth that can tell you with absolute certainty that Rembrandt ever touched this canvas. The bust, the man, the artist, the value, imaginary. How little we know of the past, we know what we're told. And finally, in the fourth chucked out draft of this service, I was going to show that reality itself can't be reliably known at all by blinding you with science in the figure of Schrodinger's cat. No, not you, Grant and Neil. No, the cat in the famous experiment that showed a cat in a randomly booby-trapped box must be considered both simultaneously alive and dead until we open the box and find out. So a thing can be both true and false. Perception creates reality, not the other way around. Which are you seeing in this bit of artwork? Are you seeing the word alive, or are you seeing the word dead, or is your mind flipping between the two hypotheses? If it's flipping between the two hypotheses, what is there? In short, I was going to show you that the life of the intellect standing proudly all by itself is a ludicrous and barren life. And I was going to show you that by using and appealing to your intellects with information and argument and cleverness. It would have been another interesting talk, Vicar, that will disappear from even the most devoted mind as quickly and completely as a snowflake on a hot stove. And all that to say, no one knows anything, least of all me. It took four drafts to get to the fact that I was undermining my own point. What a dunderhead you have employed. I may be wrong about this, and I probably am, but I have come to realize over nearly 5 years of ministry that what brought me to church as a congregant, and what called me as a minister, and what keeps bringing me back is not knowledge, not what goes on up here. No, the most real, most essential exchange that is taking place in this moment, this exchange, this talk between us, right here and now, it's not information. It never was. But a heart and soul connection that calls forth your vulnerability, your human incompleteness, and mine, so they can connect. This heart and soul connection is what I most deeply need and have always needed to get by in this incomplete existence. And I know, or at least I suspect, you come from much the same thing, for your heart, not just your head, to be in a holy place. Let's sing that hymn together. Thank you, Tony. Please be seated. So years ago, I guess I too must have drunk the Kool-Aid that Unitarianism is just about the head, just for the intellectually elite. Heck, I actually even got affirmed and rewarded for parroting that notion both here and overseas. That is something I thought I knew and was always dead wrong about. And it's been a glaring blindness, not just of this church, but of the Unitarian tradition over the years, to have to be the smartest guys at the religion conference, to get other people to say, okay, we get it, you're smart, to privilege the head over the heart. And it is time we got this straight, because privileging the intellect invalidates our first and most vital principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, not just the clever ones. What would make a church or a person lead with the intellect to impress on people, I know stuff and you do not? What would make somebody or a church do that apart from a deep sense of inadequacy, of not being accepted for the imperfect beings they are, a feeling that their worth and dignity is not inherent, not innate, but contingent, dependent on the approval of others? So the minister who comes armed with a talk that is only well-researched, only coherently argued, only broadly resourced, but whose heart is shut, armored shut, reminds me of someone very familiar. A typical middle child who tried to get his parents' attention and praise and love by bringing home impressive report cards. I like to think that I open not just my mind in these talks, but my heart as well. So these talks are not so much about providing you with stuff you need to know. These talks are just a way of being together on more or less the same page. Even if you don't happen to like or quite get what the page says, even if you can't even read the page. The essential point is being open and being together open, just as we are right now. This talk is just the glue to enable that connection, the verbal platform that'll bear a meeting of our whole selves, head and heart. And when you look at these talks, not for what they contain, but for what they do, the talk, this talk, is a kind of communion. Not a communion of bread and wine. Maybe a communion of word salad that we all share. Church should help us live happily in our completeness, our incompleteness, and our unknowing. Church should be equally about our yearning hearts as well as our busy heads. A man of fewer words than I, the Persian poet Rumi, put it like this. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase, each other, doesn't make any sense. Oh, that my church might be that field, where differences in our experiences, our preferences, our knowledge, and our theologies don't matter much. Where what we know and do not know doesn't matter. Where having to be right doesn't matter. Where the heavily defended and fortified fences between self and other can be bridged with stiles that we may traverse at will. Church isn't science. Church isn't a school. It isn't a town hall meeting or a debate club or a rotary branch with spiritual knobs on. Church is a safe place for all of us to be fully human, incomplete both in head and in heart. For in the end, all I think we truly know is what we feel at any given moment. Love or fear? Connection or isolation? Meaning or emptiness? And what the bleep else do we know, apart from what we feel in any given moment? Having reflected and redrafted a lot this week, I came to ask myself what my heart knows to be the truest, and I find I've always been surest of the things I have had the least information about. I know it's important we learn to love ourselves and others as tenderly as we would our flesh and blood, our kin, regardless of how smart they are or aren't. And that's important because we're all part of a great living presence in which and through which every particle of our life lives, moves, and has its being forever. And the proper relationship to have in that presence is gratitude and humility, not intellectual pride. Intellectual pride is what you have when you have zero faith in your inherent worth as a unique expression of that universal presence. No, I can't prove that, and so I don't know any lick of any of that, so I guess that's faith. And what I'm left with is faith, hope, and love. We live in love and faith, and so obviously we live in hope, too. And of course, that's derived from Corinthians 13 that puts it like this. Where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. And three things remain: faith, hope, and love. Now, if you think I've brought you all this way to leave you with a three-word platitude, let me tell you, first, living these is not easy. Second, only the mad try to live without them. And third, it's taken me, well, my whole lifetime to come to grasp that these, and not the intellect, are what are going to save me from despair. Dark despair. Reinhold Niebuhr, the great liberal theologian of the 20th century, had a memorable commentary on faith, hope, and love and how they save us. He said, "Nothing that is worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. And nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we must be saved by love." Surely, friends, our life is a mystery at both ends and dark in the middle. And the light of the mind by itself is inadequate to help us see our way. If you would make your way onward through the existential darkness of our lives, let hope and faith and love guide you. These lights never fail. Amen.
Rob McPherson's addresses are his intellectual property. They may only be used by other preachers if his permission is sought and expressed, acknowledgement is given that they are his work, and the addresses are used in their entirety. To seek his permission, email Rob at unitariansa@bigpond.com.
And that's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons. This is White Rabbit, out.